Back with you this evening. Great to have all of you with us. Thank you for joining us tonight as we're thinking about the Passover table, the Passover Seder, and presenting or demonstrating much of what Passover would have been like in Jesus' time and what I think we can learn from that that instructs us in our faith today and helps us understand more of what was happening at Jesus' passion and on the night in which he was betrayed when he took bread and gave it to his disciples. And I believe that was a Passover Seder that he transformed into the Lord's Supper that evening. It's been wonderful to be with you this weekend at Village Bible Church and to be with you all day. Thank you so much for everything. For those who may be joining us for the first time, I am Paul Scharf, a Church Ministries representative with the Friends of Israel Gospel Ministry, and it's really been an honor to be with you. Here's my webpage where you can always contact me. We still have a resource table in the back where you can sign up for a free subscription to Israel My Glory magazine, and all the resources on the table are free. And here are more free resources online that you'll find at foi.org/Passover. And with those things being said, we're going to get right into our lesson this evening, the Passover Seder. Christ our Passover, Christ our Passover has been sacrificed for us. Again, we know that when John began his ministry, he said of Jesus, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." It's not possible that the blood of bulls and goats or a lamb, an animal lamb, could take away the sin of the world, but Jesus, the Lamb of God, did take away the sin of the world. He who knew no sin was made to be sin for us that we might become the righteousness of God in him. So the Passover Seder, as I mentioned this morning, the word Seder is from the Hebrew word that means order. It's the order of the Passover. And we're going to think about just some preliminary things to get us in our understanding to be able to deal with this. Dr. Victor Buxbaum was a great early leader of the Friends of Israel, our first executive director, a Jewish Christian scholar, spoke numerous languages, literally rescued people out of the Holocaust, and began at that time the Friends of Israel Refugee Relief Committee in 1938, along with others we talked about this morning. Well, he has a wonderful book on the feasts, and in it he says this: "In the light of the New Testament, we obtain a full understanding of the Passover, while the deepest meaning of the Lord's Supper cannot be fathomed without the historic background of the Jewish Passover." So in other words, we must have the New Testament to really understand Passover as God intended it, and we must understand Passover to truly understand the Lord's Supper. Chris Katulka, a radio teacher on the Friends of Israel's program, says the Last Supper was a Passover Seder. I truly believe that. I know some people dispute that, have a different idea, in part because of the chronology of the Passion Week. We talked about some of those things this morning, but I believe Passover, the Last Supper was a Passover Seder, and Jesus transforms the Passover into the Lord's Supper. ESV Study Bible says Jesus himself was now about to become the true Passover lamb who would be sacrificed for the sins of his people. And again, we talked this morning about how he could both eat the Passover with his disciples and also become the Passover lamb. Now, one thing that we have to have the Passover is we have to have the Haggadah. And we had a couple of copies that people have taken. It's also free for you electronically at foi.org/Passover. Don't worry that you don't have it right now, because if we followed every sentence and every line on every page of this Haggadah, we would be here for a number of hours tonight. In fact, some Orthodox Jewish homes will spend up to 5 hours on Passover, and that may or may not include the meal in the middle of it. So we're going to have just an abbreviated version tonight of the highlights, really, of Passover. But if you're interested, you can read through all of this. It's the Friends of Israel's version of the Haggadah. There are probably thousands of different Haggadahs in the world, around the world, in different cultures. This is a Friends of Israel version, a Christ in the Passover version, which shows how Jesus fulfills and transforms the Passover. It includes some Hebrew for the prayers and various things. We won't take the time tonight to read even through all the prayers, much less to do them in both Hebrew and English, again, for sake of time. But if you're interested, I'd certainly encourage you to read through all of that. And Haggadah is from the Hebrew word Haggad, to declare. So this is the declaring, the unfolding, the telling of the Passover. Really what the Haggadah is, if you want to think about it like this, it's like if you've been to a sort of a high church service, a liturgical church service, where you walked in and they gave you a bulletin that was about that thick. And for the next hour, as you sat there, you had the entire service in your church bulletin. Maybe you've been to some type of a service like that at some point. And it had all the liturgy and all the songs, and you followed right through that thick bulletin, and maybe even had the whole sermon printed right in there. That's what the Haggadah is like for the Passover Seder. It's the telling of the Passover, and it gives us the order and the instructions of everything that is to be done. Now, as we mentioned when we left off this morning, you can't just have Passover out of the blue. You have to prepare, and we talked about that, what that is physically for the Jewish home when Passover is going to arrive, removing all the leaven, all the uncleanness from the home. And we talked about the spiritual application of that from 1 Corinthians 5 and 1 Corinthians 11 that Paul draws on and instructs the church age spiritually based on the idea of the historical practices within Passover. Here are some more resources again from the Friends of Israel telling us to get ready for Passover. We've already done these things and have these things for you. In fact, when you go downstairs after the service tonight, you will not find a table that looks exactly like that, right, Pastor? But close, right?
Close.
Very close. All right. That's the meal table, or the table where you might be seated in a Jewish home if you're ever invited. I'm honored to be the guest at a Passover Seder, in an actual Seder in a home. The meal of Passover is within the Seder. The elements of the Passover are not going to fill you up. They're just symbolic. Sort of like if this were a different type of service tonight and we were having the Lord's Supper with a potluck meal afterward. And you invite, maybe you invited a friend to church and you say, come have the Lord's Supper with us. And they think, oh, I'm hungry. Let's go have the Lord's Supper. Well, the Lord's Supper won't fill you up. It's symbolic. But the potluck afterward might fill you up, we hope, okay? That's how Passover operates. The Passover table is not going to fill anyone up. It's all symbolic. But within the Passover Seder, there is a meal. In fact, it's really the highlight of the year for the Jewish family, much like our Thanksgiving dinner. And they have special recipes, and they eat that within the Passover. Now, we're not going to take time to do that here, but we do have a meal for everyone afterward in the basement. So that is sort of afterward this evening, and the teaching will continue by way of tasting things downstairs afterward, but we'll only make reference to it here where it falls in the order. Now, I should say this. We don't have a chair here, but we do have a place and a plate. This is a special plate, sort of an educational plate that talks about the items of the Passover. I invite you to come up afterward, by the way, and look at all of these things. And all the things on the table, taste the things here, or they'll also be downstairs. Look at the things that I have with me that I was able to bring. And we have a special plate which describes the elements here of the Passover. We have a special cup, silver and gold, with the Star of David. Now, we haven't done really enough preparation here for this because we don't have a chair. I don't have the cup filled. It should be filled to overflowing. We should have a cushion and a blanket and all kinds of things, because we're expecting a dignitary to arrive here tonight. He's not here yet. Tyler is going to look for him and welcome him if he comes. Is that right? All right. He said yes. Thumbs up on that. So if this, now let me say this, if this person arrives, as we expect, this will be one of the most incredible experiences in the entire history of the world. Are you ready for that? Some of you know what I'm talking about. Some of you may think you know and you may be wrong, but you'll see as we go. All right. All right. So with that, we've talked a little bit about our plate, our Seder plate. And one thing that is never served at Passover, and it's not part of the Passover ceremony anymore since 70 AD, and that's lamb. There's a lamb shank bone. There's a bone that represents the lamb that is not present because the temple has been destroyed in AD 70. There's no sacrifice, no priesthood, no slaughtering of lambs, no Passover lamb. Our Haggadah says that the shank bone symbolizes the Passover lambs sacrificed at the temple, as well as the lambs slain in Egypt, of course, which were originally the main focus of the Passover when God protected the Israelites from death. Today, only a bone remains because without a temple, there's no sacrifice. When you think of it, that's really quite sad, isn't it, in one sense, because it reminds us, serves sort of as a metaphor for the fact that Jewish people truly are without their lamb. They are in blindness of unbelief. Their lamb has come. He's fulfilled the Passover, but they have not received him. Now, one thing that we don't have on the table either is a bowl for washing our hands lots of times, every time we do everything. I have the modern version of that, which is hand sanitizer, okay? So be assured of that. We do have a fresh box of matzah here. I've pulled some of it out, which you'll see in a little bit. We have lots more that people can use here as we go, and you can try later. Lots of matzah bread. The matzah is, of course, one of the mainstays, going back to the first Passover in Exodus. And some unique things about matzah that right off the bat, we see some incredible traits here within the Passover that show us that innate to the Jewish people in their biblical discipline over thousands of years, sometimes they express more than they really understand. And some of these things come in directions from the scriptures. Some of them are added in traditions and evidence the fact that the Jewish people just sort of innately bring forth, again, more truth than they may fully realize. This one really flows out of the scriptures. The matzah, you may realize, is it has to be pierced for it to not bake and rise. I'm not a cook or a chef, so don't hold me to the specifics of that, but we do know that it's pierced, and you'll see that if you come look at it. It reminds us that Jesus was pierced for our transgressions and crushed for our iniquities. That matzah, the way it's baked over the fire, it's striped. Okay, and that reminds us that the chastisement for our peace was upon him. By his stripes we are healed. And what we have up here is a box of good old Manischewitz matzah, comfort food for the soul. Passover collection, matzah. All right, so you come and try some of that. I already have taken 3 pieces of matzah and put them in the matzah tash, the matzah bag. Now, one thing that you'll notice about this bag, it's very important to know, and this was already in place, apparently, in Jesus' day. This is not in Exodus 12, it's not in the law, but it's in the tradition that develops as the Jewish people celebrate Passover and give it primacy, especially after returning from captivity. The matzah bag, interesting, it's called a unity bag as well. It has 3 compartments, always 3 and only 3. Can you think of anything else? Again, talking about truth coming forth from the Jewish people innately. Can you think of any other subject where we have a unity of 3, such as the Godhead? Interesting, the Jewish rabbis have all sorts of explanations, no agreement, but all sorts of possibilities as to why they might have a 3 and unity in the matzah bag. That some have said priests, Levites, and people, kings, priests, and people. But, you know, various other explanations, but you know, the question is, why does something special happen to the middle piece that we're going to think about tonight? Now, we can't start Passover just yet because Steve Herzig says, the rabbis say without a woman, you cannot tell the redemption story. There has to be a woman or a girl to come forward and light the candle. A woman lights the candle and says a prayer because it's the woman that brings life. It's the woman that brings light. It's the woman who's brought the Messiah into the world, we know. And without a woman, there would be no life. And so the Jewish people say you cannot have Passover. If there were a house of 10 men who wanted to have Passover, the whole celebration would end right here, if that's all there were, if there were no woman to come and to provide light by lighting the candle. Now, let me say this before I call up our first special guest here this evening. The computer here is just not exceedingly sturdy, sitting here on this tray. And we're going to ask if kids to come up a couple of times and so forth, various things. So everyone who comes up, please just be aware of that. I think you can handle that. And just know that as we do anything special tonight, it'll be over here. It won't be around the screen or around the projector. So just if you can stay over on this side, especially kids, when I call you up to do something special later, okay, that would be great. Now, for this lighting of the candle, we have someone I'm told is an absolute expert at this, and that is Rayleigh is going to come. Are you ready, Rayleigh? You can come on either side here, and I'm told she knows exactly how to do this. Now, I did not go over this before, Rayleigh, with you, but I'm going to tell you now what we need you to do as you light the candle, but right before you light it. After you light it, what you're going to do is take your hands and go like this, okay? That sort of symbolizes like you're praying and asking God to flood this table, this Passover table, with light. Okay, so you light the candle and see if you can do that I just showed you. Can you do that? And I'm going to read the prayer in English that she would recite as she does that. So go ahead and light while I read the prayer that says, "Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who sanctified us with your commandments and commanded us to kindle the festival lights." She did that so well. Isn't that great? Let's give her a hand, all right? And Rayleigh, Pastor JJ has a prize for you later. You can see him sometime later, and he'll give you a little prize for your help tonight. All right, so we've got, with the candle lighted now, we are ready to begin, and Passover revolves around four cups. Now, I have here the special cup I mentioned, that's setting aside. I have here a cup filled with juice. Every one of us would have a cup, and we would sip from it four times. There are four cups, or sometimes I'll set out four little cups to symbolize the fact that there are four cups. These are the four cups of Passover. These had developed by Jesus' day. Chris Katalka says these four cups are like fence posts that guide us through the Seder. Each cup has a name and each is connected to Exodus 6:6 and 7. So the four cups of the Passover, he said, not only speak to the lives of the Jewish people who celebrate them, but they also define, as we'll see, really the Christian life. We can draw application from them. The four cups, as was mentioned here, come from Exodus 6. Now again, this is built up as tradition into the Passover through the centuries. But in Exodus 6, we were there this morning and we didn't really take time to talk about Exodus 6. You remember we talked about Moses at the burning bush and God commissioning Moses and God giving him guidance of what is to come. And Moses finally has the courage to go with Aaron and stand before Pharaoh at the end of this whole narrative that's given to us there in Exodus 3 and 4. And in Exodus 5, Moses, he works up the courage and he goes into Pharaoh. And he thinks we're going to have the Exodus right now. And Pharaoh says, if you have time to come and complain to me like this, your people are going to still have the same quota, but they have to now have mud to make their own mud to make their bricks. And he throws them out of the court. And boy, do they get some dirty looks as they're walking past the children of Israel out of Pharaoh's court. And Moses is despondent. He is in despair. And in Exodus 6, 1 through 13, you can read the passage later. God preaches a personal message now to Pharaoh, to Moses, in his despondency. And the thesis of the sermon is, I am the Lord. I am the Lord. It would be a great passage to go to the next time you're in despair, to hear the word of God, I am the Lord. Well, from this passage in Exodus 6, we have the basis of the four cups from verses 6 and 7. The first cup is the cup of sanctification. So the leader in the home would refer here to Exodus 6:6. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. God is going to set his people apart, sanctify them, take them out of Egypt, set them apart from the worldliness and sin of Egypt, and bring them back toward their covenant land. And with that first cup, the leader, the father in the home, would pray a prayer. Blessed art thou, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who has created the fruit of the vine. And each one then would drink together. That is the first cup, the cup of sanctification, the first cup of Passover. Now there are, as I said, there are four of these cups, and certain things happen in the order here in between each of the four cups. At this point, they would take some karpos, that is greenery or parsley, and dip it in salt water. And I'm just going to place it in the salt water and leave it there. You can come up and look at it if you need to see that later as a visual effect. And they would, of course, take that and actually eat some of it. And that signifies a couple of things for the Jewish people. Karpos, parsley, is greenery. Reminds us of the greenness, the greenery of spring. How many are glad that spring is coming? All right? And it's dipped in that salt water, and it's going to have a bitter, salty aspect to it. It reminds the Jewish people of tears, the salt of tears, the tears of slavery and bondage of their ancestors, the tears of other types of hardship in this life. And so that salary, that karpos, is dipped in the salt water. Now, one other aspect of that is it brings back a remembrance as you dip that parsley in the salt water. Kind of reminds us, remember the man we saw on the screen this morning dipping the hyssop in the blood to put the blood on the lintel and on the sides of the door. And you know, again, here is where in the Jewish mind more truth is set forth than is really perfectly understood, because Jesus also related to the hyssop. Remember when he was on the cross, they put a sponge full of the sour wine on a hyssop branch and held it to his mouth. So these things just run through the scriptures, and again, through the Jewish discipline of the scriptures over hundreds and thousands of years, they just come out in the Passover and sometimes can be applied even to the Messiah in a way the Jewish people themselves do not understand. But the parsley, the karpos. Now, at this point, something very, very important is going to happen. The afikoman, You say, what is that? Well, we'll find out here. We take the middle piece, always the middle piece. Never the front or the back, but always the middle. Of how many? Three pieces in the unity bag. We take the middle piece out. And we break it. And we take the bigger half, and we do something very special with it. We put the lesser half back in the unity bag, and we take the bigger half, we put it in the Afikoman bag. And now, here's where we're going to have, this is really the fun part for the kids who are here, the highlight of the night for them. It's going to be spread out here over a little bit, so we don't need anyone to come up here yet. But do we have anyone here, the young or the young at heart, who wants to look for and find the Afikoman bag? How many do we have? Oh, we've got several. Okay. So you're going to do that later, but right now what you have to do is close your eyes and you can't see where I'm going to hide it. Now remember, it's going to be somewhere on this side of the screen and the projector and all these things. So, but that's all the hint you get. So close your eyes here on the count of three, and I won't make it too hard because we don't want to have a half hour time of looking for it later. But close your eyes on the count of three. I'm going to hide the Afikoman bag. Ready? One, two, three. Close your eyes if you're going to try to look for the Afikoman bag, and I'm going to hide it. And somebody told me I need to wait to start talking till I'm back here again so I don't give it away. And it's not too hard, but you can open your eyes now. And someone will find that, I think, pretty quickly later when we get to it. Bruce Scott, in his book on the feasts from the Friends of Israel, says, the middle matzah is taken from the matzah pouch, broken in half. One half is put back inside the pouch. The other is wrapped in cloth, hidden away, called the Afikoman. Jewish tradition and legend says that this Afikoman piece that's been now broken and taken and hidden can have healing powers. Now I don't believe this is true, I'm just telling you what their legends say. It can calm the waves of the sea. Do those things sound familiar to anyone? So, the Afikoman. Now at this point, Jewish people want to be hospitable. Much as you might invite someone to your home for Thanksgiving or Christmas, perhaps a student who's away from home or someone else, so the Jewish people will do at Passover. So they might have already, and maybe you've had this opportunity, or maybe you will someday, to be the honored guest at a Passover in a Jewish home. The guests would already be here, but just to mark the occasion and demonstrate their desire to be hospitable here within the Seder. Now, perhaps they would send a child to the door. For sake of time, we won't have anyone do this, but they would go out and, you know, symbolically invite in the stranger. Not that there would be someone there, but just to show, to remind themselves of the importance of welcoming in the stranger. Then at this time, there would be the four questions. Now, we're also going to just kind of gloss over this rather quickly. This would really be, excuse me, another highlight of the evening in the family for the children. Much like we might have children in our Christmas play or Christmas pageant or service, preparing for months to come up and stand and sing and recite all from memory. So in the home, the Jewish home, they might have the children prepare for weeks or months. This would be one area they would be involved in, that is reciting the four questions. It reminds us at the end of Exodus 12, this really comes from God's institution of the Passover, when he said, your children are going to ask you, why are we doing this? And he says, this is for their learning, for their understanding. He tells Moses, that is part of the importance of the Passover. And so the Jewish people have placed four questions in the Passover Seder. And they go on this line of thought. Why is this night different from all other nights? On all other nights, we eat either leavened bread or matzah, but on this night, we eat only matzah. On all other nights, we eat vegetables and herbs of all kinds. Why on this night do we eat bitter herbs? On all other nights, we never think of dipping even once. Why on this night do we dip twice? And so on. The four questions that are recited here to remember the significance, the importance, the meaning of Passover. Then perhaps they would utilize children again for this, reciting the 10 plagues, reciting them in Hebrew. So talking through the 10 plagues that are, we remember, blood, frogs, lice, flies, pestilence, boils, hail, locust, darkness, finally the death of the firstborn. These would be recited in Hebrew, and the leader might take the juice and using his little finger to dip and go around a white plate. It would have the impression sort of blood, spots of blood around the plate. And you might even add more. Perhaps there's someone at the table who is struggling with an illness or another type of problem that they might add for that to sort of give it over to the Lord God along with the plagues that they remember that God sent as a judgment but also as a means of the freedom of the children of Israel. All right, well, here's where we can now utilize another volunteer. Do we have a brave soul or maybe a person who likes horseradish? Do we have anybody like that who wants to try horseradish? By the way, I believe we do have some nuts on the table, right? So if you're allergic to nuts, you might want to stay away if that's a big problem. Is that correct? Okay. Not in the horseradish, and there's some without nuts downstairs. But if you're super allergic to nuts, you may not want to be one of the volunteers. But is there someone who wants to try horseradish? Who do we have? Who do we have for that? Oh, yes. All right, perfect. Jacob is going to do it. All right. So you come on up here, take a piece of matzah, right? You can, you can do it right from there. We just want everyone to see your face as you do this, so. As if you take, you make the Hillel sandwich. Now, while he's, you can take as much of that matzah. We got lots of that. You can take as much as you want. And then make a little sandwich using the horseradish. So, Rabbi Hillel lived around the time of Jesus. And he wanted credit for inventing the sandwich. And here's the sandwich. Oh, he took a big scoop of horseradish there. And let's see how he likes this. Someone may need to run and get him a bottle of water when we're done here. So we have the matzah. Just make a little sandwich there, and then let's let everyone watch you take a bite of that. And are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, turn this way. All right. How's it taste? I think he likes horseradish. Should we give him a big hand? All right. You can do as you like with the rest of that. Okay. It's hitting him now. All right. Thank you much. All right, so the Hillel sandwich. Yeah, you can just leave that there. That's fine. We'll leave that out of the way here. I'll put it. And so the no one else will use this. The Rabbi Hillel sandwich, matzah dipped in horseradish. Now, that, of course, brings about remembrance, a remembrance of the bitterness of Egypt, the bitterness of slavery, the bitterness of bondage. There you see they could actually have a horseradish from the plant on the plate, sometimes called the marar, the bitterness. All right. Also, lettuce is a bitter herb, if you will. We don't have any lettuce here, but that's fine. You see it on the screen. Also, we have an egg. This I'll just talk about for a moment. We have a boiled egg. And that might be eaten here in the course of the Seder. The egg is boiled and roasted or scarred. And there are many different ideas of how the egg entered into the Passover Seder, and no one really knows for sure. Isn't it interesting that for both the Jewish people and Christians, the egg has entered into our spring holidays, Passover and Easter, without any real reason for it to be there. And some would say, well, it's based on some sort of pagan custom that was introduced in both cases and various schools of thought about that. But really the best explanation or the most edifying explanation I understand is that the egg here in the Jewish Passover reminds of the newness of life again, the life of spring, the circle of life, if you will, and it's scarred and it reminds them of the destruction of the temple in AD 70. So you can come up and look at that egg later if you'd like. And with that, we're finished with the first cup. And so we would have now the second cup, which is the cup of deliverance. Some very important things are about to happen here during the Passover in the time here of the second cup, the cup of deliverance. That cup is based on Exodus 6:6. I will deliver you from slavery to them. The cup of deliverance. Now, I believe that Luke, and it's difficult in Luke because he's not really talking so much chronologically as he is topically or thematically, but I believe that it's very possible that Luke references the second cup. By the way, let me go back up quickly and add a footnote. Something I forgot to say about the first cup is that the first cup, remember Jesus and his disciples celebrate the Passover in an upper room that Jesus commissioned them to go and prepare. It's possible, some believe, based on Jewish customs, the first cup would have been taken down on the first floor before they went up into the upper room. Just a possibility. Thought I'd mention that. But Luke seems to mention this second cup. It's before the cup of the Lord's Supper. And it's in Luke 22 when it says he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he said, "Take this and divide it among yourselves." And that may be a reference to the second cup. Now, the cup of deliverance, when Jesus, as in every Jewish home, Jewish Passover, he would take the second cup with a prayer, they would drink together. Now, we're going to have, let's see, who would really like to try a special sandwich here? We have another volunteer? Yes, tell me your name again. Braylon, that's it, do I have it right? Braden, is that right? Here he comes, Braden. All right, you're going to take another new fresh piece of matzah, and you're going to dip twice. You're going to dip it in both. Now, he's going to dip it in the horseradish as well as the charoset. The charoset, this is the one thing up here that you might really want to eat. It's a kind of a sweet, fairly healthy little mixture of things, nuts and apples, and I'm not sure all what we have in this version. There's lots of recipes for charoset, what Debbie has in here, but it's nuts are in here. It tastes good, and it's set here as a reminder of, what do you think? The mud they had to make for their own bricks. And it's also a sweet, and so by making this sandwich here out of both the bitter and the sweet, dipped in charoset and bitter herbs, horseradish. So you're going to dip in both, Braden, the horseradish and the charoset. And then let's see how you like that, okay? Oh, he just got just a little dab, especially the charoset, which is the good stuff. Okay, and you need to put them both on at the same time so you get the bitter and the sweet. Oh, he took just a little bit of horseradish. That's okay, but make sure you get some charoset on there and then tell us what you think. All right, and he's going to have the bitter and the sweet. All right. All right. How's that taste, Braden? Doing okay? No, he said. All right. And the only thing you didn't do is really make a sandwich out of it, but that's okay. But thank you so much. Let's give him a hand. Very good. And I'll put all this over here. We'll toss that away later. All right, we still have plenty of matzah here, and we're going to proceed. And again, here's the karoset I talked about, nuts, apple, cinnamon, bitter herbs, marar. Now, let me talk about some very important things that I think happened here at the second cup. In Matthew 26, which is where we're going to focus as we go here the rest of the time, Jesus and his disciples, at eating the Passover, he stops and says, verse 21, "Assuredly I say to you, one of you will betray me." And they were exceedingly sorrowful, and each of them began to say, "Lord, is it I?" That's a good attitude for all of us to have, isn't it? But he answered and said, "He who dips his hand with me in the dish will betray me." I think he's talking about exactly what Braden just did here. Dipping twice in the karoset and the horseradish in the bitter herbs. So Jesus says this, and then he says, "The Son of Man indeed goes just as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had not been born." And I wonder if at that moment Jesus was looking this way and dipping, and Judas was looking that way and dipping, and maybe their hands touched in the dish. And Judas, who was betraying him, answered and said, "Rabbi, is it I?" And maybe Jesus just whispered back to him, "You have said it." I'm just envisioning how this may have happened. But I think this is happening here between the second and third cups at this point as they're dipping together. Should have displayed the verse here. "He who has dipped his hand with me in the dish will betray me." Now, at this point, dinner is served. Dinner for you, again, downstairs, where you can not only try these things, but there'll be some other food for you there. Dinners, and this would be, there could be chicken, there could be roast beef, there could be turkey, matzo ball soup, special recipes, family recipes, traditions, local recipes. Someone said, since we're in Kansas, someone said you even have a barbecue Passover, you know. So you can have all these different things, and we'll see what we have afterward. But now, so you can imagine in your mind's eye, we would have dinner at this point. So we've been going at Passover for maybe 45 minutes or so, and we're only covering the highlights, not going through line by line. So we might be maybe 2 hours into Passover at this point. At this point, we'd stop for dinner. And so maybe that would take an hour or whatever it might be. So after dinner is over, now things are going to happen very quickly in terms of biblical significance here. Again, as Jesus and the disciples, we believe, would have celebrated these things in their day, as traditions had come into the Passover after the captivity, and I think it's perhaps right here after dinner when something happens that only John records. And I believe this apparently is a separate, distinct incident from the one we just saw, where John, who may have been the youngest disciple, he may have taken on the role of the child, you know, asking the four questions and some of these things. And he was, remember, close to Jesus. They would have been reclining, not sitting at chairs, but reclining beneath the table to demonstrate their freedom. And there was leaning on Jesus' bosom, therefore, one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. And you can see Simon Peter, Jesus had said, "Most assuredly I say to you, one of you will betray me." Simon Peter therefore motioned to him to ask who it was of whom he spoke. Then leaning back on Jesus' breast, John said to Jesus, "Lord, who is it?" Now, I don't know that he said that for the whole group. He may have whispered that to Jesus, "Lord, who is it?" And Jesus answered, and perhaps softly again, "It is he to whom I shall give a piece of bread when I have dipped it." And having dipped the bread, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon. So maybe no one heard all of this. No one understood all of this. They didn't seem to. Jesus perhaps just discreetly dipped a piece of bread, gave it to Judas, No one would really have thought anything of that. But after the piece of bread, Satan entered him. Then Jesus said to him, "What you do, do quickly." No one at the table knew for what reason he said this to him. For some thought, because Judas had the money box, that Jesus had said to him, "Buy those things we need for the feast," or that he should give something to the poor. Having received the piece of bread, he then went out immediately, and it was night. And someone said it was night in more ways than one for Judas, wasn't it? It was the night of satanic darkness for him. He had fallen into the hands of the leaders of Jerusalem, who had a plan to arrest Jesus and take him, but they wanted to get through the Passover peacefully. But because Judas was willing to offer Jesus, they were able to accelerate that plan, and they saw a ripe opportunity to take him, and we know what then unfolds on this night in which he is betrayed. All right, at this point, you have the dessert. Just as you can't begin the Passover without a woman lighting the candle, you can't end it without the dessert. But the dessert is not the elaborate, fancy family treats and recipes. Those have already been eaten during the meal. This is the ceremonial dessert. And what do you think is the dessert? Well, it's the afikoman. It's the middle piece of bread. So now what we have to do, all the kids and all the kids at heart who raise their hand who want to look for the afikoman, stand up right now. Okay, good. We got a good crowd. Don't be shy. Stand right up. Come on right up here. Why don't you come right up here in the center and kind of get ready to start together here. And while you're coming, let me say again, the afikoman piece. Come this way. Be careful there on the cords, guys. Be real careful. And everyone come this side of the projector and the computer. There we go. We got 2, 4. Let's see. 2, 4, 6, 8 of you, I think. Do I have that? 2, 4, 6, 8. 10 of you, I think. Right. Wow, what a group. All right. Someone's going to find this real quickly. And whoever does is going to get a special prize to see Pastor JJ for a special prize. Okay. So the afikoman piece that's been broken and hidden. Does this seem like you had, to you like it has any significance? The middle of three, taken away, broken and hidden. It seems clearly that even if without full knowledge, the Jewish people built into the Passover something that's very closely resembles Christ the Messiah, the middle of three, taken and broken, his body hidden away, and now it's going to be found and redeemed and brought back. All right? Jesus is going to take that piece, but we've got to find it first. So I'm going to leave the slide right there, and I'm going to count to three again. You don't have to close your eyes, guys, but on the count of three, don't go too fast, and don't push. This is a mental game. Don't push or shove or run too fast, okay? Some of you are going to find it real quick. Anyway, so let's go on the count of three, then you look for the afikoman. Ready? 1, 2, 3. All right. You're looking around on this side of things here. Nope, it's not that way. It's on this somewhere on this side of the church. We have a winner already. All right, bring that back. You've got to bring it here. All right, all you kids, come on up here. We'll give all of you a hand. Tell me your name again.
Noah.
All right, I love that name. So, Noah, you come right up to the front and hold that up for us. And all the kids stay up here. Let's give them a big hand, all right? Great. Thank you. And Noah's going to get a special prize. What a great job. All right, you guys can all go sit down. And so we have here the afikoman bag. Steve Herzig tells us here now that Jesus would do what every leader in every Passover in Jerusalem would do. But he's going to do something also incredibly different with it. The normal thing that every leader of every Passover would do is now take that middle piece, that afikoman, which has been broken, hidden, now found and redeemed and brought back, and he would break that piece. and he would break off pieces and pass them to each one and offer them that they would eat together. But what does Jesus do that is transformative here in the middle of this? Is he takes this piece and he breaks it and distributes it. The great 19th century Jewish Christian scholar Alfred Edersheim says, Christ connected with the breaking of the unleavened cake at the close of the meal the institution of the breaking of bread in the Holy Eucharist. Don't let the word Eucharist throw you. Some denominations use that with a different connotation. It's from the Greek word that means thanksgiving. It's another word for communion. Jesus took the aphikoman, he broke it and distributed it as would take place in every Passover. But as he does it, he does something absolutely astounding. As they were eating, Matthew 26:26, Jesus took bread, blessed and broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat. This is my body. Now, something else that's amazing about the aphikoman, and we don't know if this word was yet in use in Jesus' time, but that word aphikoman is the only Greek word in the Seder, and it means, I came, or he came. That means that every Jewish home in the world, as they've celebrated Passover, the 8 days up to this Thursday, have borne testimony and shared together and stated together to one another, he came. But of course, in the blindness of unbelief, they miss the significance of that statement. Where did this come from? Well, our Haggadah says it probably was added by first century Hebrew Christians who wanted to sort of Christianize the Passover. So we don't know that that term was used in Jesus' day when he celebrated the Passover, but the order was used, the breaking of bread that he turned into the breaking of the bread of the Lord's Supper. And now he follows that in the third cup, which is the cup of redemption, as they would take the cup of redemption. And Luke says he also took the cup after supper. Paul says he also took the cup after supper. This is the third cup, the cup of redemption. Just as in every Jewish household, they would take the cup of redemption from Exodus 6:6, I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great acts of judgment. They would take that cup of redemption, but what did Jesus do as he took it and they drank together? He did something again to transform this third cup of four cups, ESV Study Bible says, this cup of redemption. What did he do with it? According to Edersheim, it's according to the Jewish ritual, the third cup was filled at the close of the supper. And Paul tells us that this cup is now to be renamed the cup of blessing, because Jesus pronounced a special blessing over it. Paul calls it the cup of blessing that we bless. The cup of redemption has become for the Christian the cup of blessing, a participation in the blood of Christ. Jeremiah Study Bible says a Passover meal features four cups, and this third cup is given a new significance. It becomes the cup of blessing. Why? Because as Jesus takes the third cup, prays over that cup, invites the disciples to share with him, as would be done in every Jewish Passover, he adds and states this. Then he took the cup, Matthew 26:27, and gave thanks, and gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. Amen. And they would have taken that third cup, which is now, through the church age, the cup of blessing, and drank that cup together. Let me add something here for your footnote to jog your memory. This is not a Passover verse, but in the law, in Exodus 24, verse 8, Moses made a statement that's going to be ringing bells in your mind when you hear it. For Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, "This is the blood of the covenant, which the Lord has made with you according to all these words." What did Jesus say? "This is my blood of the new covenant." And he's transforming the Jewish order here for the church age. Remember, and we're coming up to this now as we get near the close, there will be again the Jewish Passover reinstated legitimately in the millennial kingdom, Ezekiel 45. But for the church age, in the midst, there's no Passover. Christ is our Passover. He transformed the Passover and gave us the Lord's Supper. Now, at this point, we would have something both fun and sort of mysterious again, and that would be, if you'll forgive the crumbs I have all over me here, that would be the opening of the door. Who's our guest that we were expecting? Who knows who that would be? Did we ever have a dignitary come, Tyler? Oh, he says he never came. I'm so disappointed. Who is that we would be expecting? Who? Not the Messiah. Elijah. That's right. Remember how the Old Testament ends? Elijah must come before the great and terrible day of the Lord. So here they would send again a child to participate. We won't take the time to do this, but to run to the door, to open the door and look for Elijah. And here they would actually have set a ceremonial place for Elijah, very comfortable, full plate and all this in case he came. You know, that's, again, there's some mystery to that, isn't there? Because we know Elijah's coming. Jesus said, if you would have received it, he said to the nation of his day, John would have been Elijah, but you didn't, so he wasn't. But Elijah's still going to come and restore all things. I believe Elijah's going to be one of the two witnesses. If the rapture happens tonight, how many wish it does? Pray it does? How many have a problem the rapture wouldn't solve? No one, right? If the rapture happens tonight, I believe Elijah's going to be on the streets of Jerusalem tomorrow morning. That's another sermon. But Elijah's coming. But you know what? He's not just coming to sit in a fluffy, comfortable chair and eat Passover. He's going to come and restore all things. There's some bittersweet days ahead for the nation of Israel. Again, sharing more than they really understand here within the Passover Seder. Well, we've come almost all the way through our Passover, and we're now at the fourth and final cup, the cup of acceptance. Steve Herzig, though, tells us something very interesting we're going to see about this. He says Jesus didn't drink from that fourth cup. Why? Well, the cup of acceptance, the people had not accepted him. The nation had not accepted him. This is the cup that's based in Exodus 6. I will take you to be my people and I will be your God. When Jesus came to that fourth cup, he refrained. He set that cup aside. Matthew tells us that Jesus on Tuesday of Passion Week, after he'd ridden into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, and they had cried the words of Psalm 118, "Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord," but not enough to spare and save the whole nation. And so Jesus had to say on Tuesday of Passion Week to the nation as a whole, "You shall see me no more." But did he put a period there? No. He has this blessed word that comes next. What's that? Until. Until you say. In other words, it will happen in the future, but not until you say, "Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." So in the meantime, he can't drink of that fourth cup, the cup of acceptance. Chris Katalka says he denies the fourth cup. That fourth cup of acceptance. The cup that's based in Exodus 6, 7, "I will take you to be my people and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God." The cup of acceptance. What does Jesus say about this? "I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on Does he put a period there? No. What's next? This glorious word, until. In other words, it will happen when you meet the condition. When the nation looks upon him whom they have pierced and mourns for him as one mourns for an only son. Until that day, Ezekiel 45, when he drinks it new in the kingdom. In that day, he will take up the fourth cup, but not until that day. Dr. Robert Dean says he doesn't take the fourth cup. It relates to the Messiah in his kingdom, and he will not take it until he comes in his kingdom. Dr. David Brown, Jesus did not drink of the fourth cup. He tells them why and when he will drink it. Again, Mark 14, 25, I will no longer drink of the fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new in the kingdom of God. And isn't it amazing that the Passover had both a backward look to Exodus and the deliverance and a forward look to the coming of Messiah. And Jesus, as he transforms Passover here into the Lord's Supper for the church age, he also gives it both a backward significance back to his death on the cross as our Passover lamb and also a forward look to the day when he will drink this again with us, with the Jewish nation in the kingdom of God. But then Paul even adds another subtlety to that. Since that fourth cup, Dr. Dean says, was not taken, it leaves us with a future focus. And Paul draws on that and adds to it. He says in 1 Corinthians 11, as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death. Here's that wonderful word again in a different context. Until he comes. So for the believer today in the church, the Lord's Supper points us back to the cross, ahead to his return, and we also understand it ties into the Passover, which points us ahead to the Passover to be celebrated in the coming kingdom. Well, we're almost done with Passover, and the Hallel Psalms are Psalms 113 to 118. This is what the disciples would have sung when they sung a hymn as they went out to the Mount of Olives. How many know they didn't sing a Fanny Crosby gospel song? But they sang the Psalms of the Hallel. And those, I encourage you to read those Psalms, and especially Psalm 118, which is so important on Palm Sunday, as the people who did stop and rejoice and sing praise to Christ on Palm Sunday sang these words, "Save us now, Hoshiana, save now, O Lord. O Lord, I pray, send now prosperity. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. We have blessed you from the house of the Lord." Psalm 118, 25 and 26. That whole section there is so significant, and it's so significant to what happened on Palm Sunday. That's really another study, but I invite you to meditate on that, think about it, consider it. And then at this point, there would be a closing prayer. And then one final element to the Passover Seder. And this is where everyone, now having come through this whole evening together, the Seder and the feasting of Passover, would end on a high note, sort of exuberantly pump their fist in the air and shout in unison, "Next year in Jerusalem." Now we say that, and Pastor gets excited about that, and we should all get excited about that. Now, a couple interesting things. First of all, anyone could go to Jerusalem for Passover this year. Did you know it's the most popular time of the year to be in Jerusalem since 1967? Thousands of tourists come to Jerusalem for Passover. But this statement, which is built on a hope, you know, derived from a time when they couldn't go to Jerusalem, remains by tradition in the Passover order. But there's a sadness to it when we think about it also, isn't there? Because, again, they're saying more than they know. Because there are going to be things happening in Jerusalem, and maybe next year. But it's not going to be yet the kingdom or just the wonders of a joyous Passover. There's coming to Jerusalem a time of tribulation, 7 years of tribulation, before that future kingdom. And for the Jewish people who have not received their Messiah, their Lamb, they don't have that sacrifice that takes away all sin. Jesus came and he died for the ungodly. He died for the sins of the world. He pronounced, "It is finished." He took away the sins of the world, that which no sacrifice, no Passover could ever do. He alone can bring peace to Jerusalem. He offered Jerusalem peace on Palm Sunday, peace and prosperity. They rejected him as their king. He was crucified, buried. He is risen again. He died for the sins of the world in our place for our sins so we could have the forgiveness of sin if we trust in him. Be in heaven with him forever because he arose, opening the way to life. He's the Son of God who became also man. He became the Messiah. He has come, and we must receive him. And, you know, if we have that hope and we understand that hope, then we can look back a second time through that lens at our Jewish friends as they say next year in Jerusalem, and maybe we want to, you know, shout with them because we have a more detailed understanding biblically with the full revelation of the New Testament, and we understand it's not going to be next year, but there will be a day when the people of Israel will be fully regathered in faith in Jerusalem, having come to faith and life in the land, having come to receive their Messiah in the land of Israel, through the days of the tribulation, the purpose of which is to bring Israel to repent to receive her king and his kingdom. They will be brought back to him, and they will be regathered, and all Israel will be saved, Romans 11:26. And Isaiah 4:3 says, everyone in Jerusalem will be holy. And they will have their king and his kingdom, and they'll be there for Passover. Ezekiel 45 will be there to witness it. And so in that spirit, we can say yes, next year in Jerusalem, and one day in the New Jerusalem, when Christ will reign forever, he is our Passover lamb. I hope that you find these things helpful. If I've, I should say something I didn't mention. Jewish people have taken the Passover all over the world. There are different traditions, customs, meanings. If I said something that you've seen done differently, that may well be expected. If I've said something incorrect or unclear, please let that drop from your mind and think on the great themes that we've covered this evening, how they inform our understanding of what the distinction is between Israel and the church and Passover and the Lord's Supper, and how Jesus transformed the Passover and how he's coming back, how he's fulfilled the Passover, and how he's going to come and restore all things in the future kingdom and again, reinstate the Passover for the Jewish people.